head and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Once again, it's time to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, a lesson in murder by experts. But first, on the lighter side, let's drop in and visit Burns and Allen. George Burns and Gracie Allen were another pioneering radio act. Gracie born in San Francisco. Burns, the male half of an act known as Burns and Lorraine. But Burns and Lorraine were parting company and George needed a replacement. Enter Gracie Allen. George and Gracie were married in January of 1926 and then returned to New York in a string of stage performances, where they opened at the Palace on a bill with Eddie Cantor and Georgie Chessel. Cantor, impressed by Gracie's wit, asked her to appear on his Sunday night NBC program. She created quite the stir and was booked, this time with husband in hand, into Rudy Valley's Fleischman's Hour. By 1932, they were signed by CBS to their own program. By 1938, George and Gracie were among the most established performers on the air. 1949 was their last full year in radio when they made the move to television in October of 1950. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with George Burns and Gracie Allen and special guest star Frank Sinatra from August of 1943. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos, and Andy.
Bill Goodwin speaking for Lever Brothers, makers of Swans. Well, it's Tuesday night again, time for another pleasant visit with George Burns and Gracie Allen, their guests Frank Sinatra, Felix Mills and his orchestra, and the Swantet. And now meet the people who live in the Burns house, George and Gracie. Here they are. Well, George and Gracie have just returned home from a tour of the army camps where they entertained the boys during their 8-week summer vacation.
Home again.
Yes, but wasn't it fun entertaining the soldiers, dear?
Yeah. Our trip would have been perfect if it hadn't been for one little thing.
What was that, dear?
Well, I never got to sing Ain't Misbehaving. You know, we kind of built up to the climax of our act, the smash finish, my song, and as soon as I started singing, something would happen.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'd get right to my favorite part, you know, where I'd sing a... Like Jackie Horner in the corner, don't go nowhere, and I don't care. That's where it happened.
Yeah, somebody always yelled, dismissed. Or somebody always blew a bugle.
Yeah. In one camp, they even fired a gun.
Yeah. I know. And it barely missed you.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Huh?
And dear, you have such a lovely voice, too.
You really think so?
Well, of course. I wish you'd sing for me right now, George.
Hardly, sweetheart. It's just the two of us there. I feel kind of foolish.
Oh, please. Mama wants to hear her talented little songbird.
Oh, Gracie,
Oh, come on. Well, you know, that part that you sing so well, the part that they always interrupt.
Well, okay, I'll give you a little soul.
Like Jackie Horner in the corner, don't go nowhere, and I don't care.
Oh. Always in the same place. He was at the door, Gracie.
All right, dear. Well, hello, Mr. Postman.
Welcome home, Mrs. Burns. I'm so happy to see you again.
Oh, and it's nice to see you. Did you have a pleasant summer?
Suburb, Mrs. Burns. I entered a contest at the beach to choose the most perfect specimen of manhood. Naturally, I won.
Oh, naturally.
Yes. I am now Mr. Seaside Lagoon of 1943.
Oh, I'm so proud of you.
So am I. Well, I just dropped by to say hello. I'd better get along and deliver this fan mail.
Oh, you certainly have a lot of it.
Yes, and it's all for Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra? He sings, doesn't he?
Yes. He and Painted On Stockings are all the vogue now.
Well, you see, I've never heard Frank Sinatra sing.
Well, I sing just like him. I'll show you how I sound. This is just like Frank Sinatra sound. Let's get on.
Oh, that's how he sounds?
Exactly, Mrs. Burns.
Hmm. Well, thanks for your welcome, and goodbye, Mr. Postman.
Goodbye, Mrs. Burns. Remember, keep smiling.
Who was that, dear?
Oh, just the postman.
Oh, any mail for us?
No, none for us, but he had about 10,000 letters for this Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra?
Mm-hmm.
He sings, doesn't he?
Yep, but not as well as you, George.
Oh, no, Grace.
Oh, I mean it. Why should all the women be absolutely crazy about Frank Sinatra and feel about you, well, the way they do? Answer me, why?
Well...
No, I thought of that.
But I meant something else.
Oh, come in.
Greasy, darling!
Why, Tootsie Sagwell. Oh, you haven't changed a bit.
Gracie, is that a nice thing to say to her?
Oh, do you mind if I sit down? I'm so excited I can hardly talk.
Why, Tootsie?
I just got the thrill of my life. I took a taxi over here, and who do you think got out of it before I got in? Frank Sinatra.
Him again.
Oh, the taxi ride over here cost me $4.80.
$4.80? Well, you only live 5 blocks from here.
Well, I know, but do you think I'd get out of that cab until the seat cooled off?
I see, Tootsie. In other words, you didn't want to lose touch with Sinatra, huh?
Of course not.
What do you see in the man anyhow?
What do I see in him? Oh, crazy. When he sings all or nothing at all never enters my mind.
Oh. And just to think that my husband has 3 times the talent Frank Sinatra has.
Who has?
George, that's who. And he has 10 times Frank Sinatra's sex appeal.
For what sex?
You'll see. I'm going to do something about this.
Well, hi, you people. Welcome home.
Oh, Bill Goodwin. Hello.
Hello, Bill. Good to see you.
George.
Tootsie, aren't you going to say hello to your dream man?
Hello, Bill.
Why, Tootsie.
Oh, I get it. Bill, she's in love with Frank Sinatra now.
Yes, I'm sorry, Bill, but I guess you and I have...
Oh, well, that's all right, Tootsie. Personally, the first time I saw you...
Oh, you're just jealous of Frankie. You just ought to see the crowd of women outside of his house when he sings in the shower.
Oh, now. Wait a minute, Tootsie. Those women aren't there to hear Frank sing.
Huh?
No, they're trying to get at that soap he uses.
Oh, right.
Well, gee, you know how women go for Swan soap. You see, Swan is actually 4 swell soaps in 1. The soap for your hands and face for bathing the baby, the soap for your dishes and for your light laundry. 4 swell soaps in 1.
Well, look, I'll tell you a little secret, Bill. George is going to take Frank Sinatra's place as the number one singer.
What?
Well, let's face it. Can anyone hold a candle to George when he sings? Well,
Gracie, come to think of it, that's just how George sounds when he sings.
How?
Like someone was holding a candle to him. You forget it, Gracie. This Sinatra boy is dynamite. Why, the girls offer to do his laundry. They clamor to wash his dishes.
Does he let them?
Well, of course not. You think he wants to miss the fun of washing those dishes with swans? Why, that swan's an ever-loving Sudson Liz. Swan is mild, too. So mild, you don't have to worry about rough red hens. Swan helps keep him looking soft and beautiful.
Oh, I wonder who's doing Frankie's light laundry.
Well, whoever it is, I hope they use swans, because swans are great wartime buy, and Frankie deserves the best.
Oh, Frankie, Frankie, that's all I hear. It is so unfair when George is a much better singer.
Ain't misbehaving all.
Oh, stop. Are you two kidding? Why, Frank Sinatra sang in the bowl a couple of Saturdays ago.
That's nothing. George sang in the tub.
Well, I give up.
Well, I'm going over to see this Frank Sinatra. I'm going to tell him that from now on, my husband will be the one whose autograph they'll fight to get. My husband will be the one whose clothes they'll tear off.
Oh, please, Gracie.
Oh, please, nothing. I won't rest, George, until the whole world finds out that you wear pink shorts.
Oh.
There's gonna be a hallelujah day when the boys have all come home to stay and a million bands begin to play. We'll be dancing the victory polka, and when we've lit the torch of liberty in those blackout lands across the sea, and each man can proudly say I'm free, we'll be dancing the victory polka. Just a souvenir, and we'll heave a mighty sigh
when each gal can kiss the boys he kissed goodbye.
And they'll come marching down Fifth Avenue, the United Nations in review. When this lovely dream has all come true, we'll be dancing the victory polka.
Just arriving at Frank Sinatra's house to tell him that he'll soon be out of a job, that her husband, George Burns, is going to replace him as the nation's swooner crooner.
Hello, I'd like to see Frank Sinatra.
I'm Frank Sinatra.
Oh, my goodness. Are you Frank Sinatra?
Well, yes. Won't you come in?
Well, no, thank you. You see, I had some bad news to tell you, but now that I see you, I haven't got the heart.
Why not?
Well, you poor boy, you look so hungry.
Really, I'm not hungry, Miss Allen.
Oh, you recognize me.
Well, sure, although I didn't at first. I thought you were a high school kid after my autograph.
Oh, you mean one of those teenage girls?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Of course, some people have the mistaken idea that I'm older than that. My mother and father, for instance.
What do they know about
that? Yeah, that's what I say.
Well, what is it that you wanted to tell me?
Well, I kind of hate to say it now after you've been such an adorable liar.
Well, that's all right. What's this bad news?
Well, you see, I'm married to George Burns.
Oh. That is bad. No, I think I know how you feel.
You know how I feel?
Yes, you see, for a long time, I didn't get much of my salary either.
Oh, but I'm afraid you don't understand, Mr. Sinatra. The bad news is for you.
For me?
Yes. Your career is over.
What?
My husband sings.
Well?
Well, there's only room for one swooner crooner. Frank Sinatra or George Burns, so naturally you've got to go.
Well, maybe there's room for both your husband and me in the singing business.
Oh, no, I'm afraid not, Frankie. You see, you're both the same type. I can tell because you both have the same effect on people.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, when you sing, women swoon.
Does that happen when George sings?
Well, even men faint.
Yes. I've heard your husband sing, and I can believe that.
Oh, sure. Well, I guess that's all I have to say, Frankie. Goodbye, and oh, be sure to tune in Saturday night and listen to the hit parade starring George Burns.
Just a moment, Mrs. Burns. I don't claim to be a great singer, but I do know that I'm better than George Burns.
Are you out of your mind?
No, I mean it.
Well, there's only one thing to do, then. We'll have a contest and embarrass you publicly.
Oh, now, Mrs. Burns, a contest?
Oh, afraid, huh?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, I'll be broadcasting at CBS this afternoon, so you bring your husband over and we'll let the audience decide.
Mm-hmm. You're awfully game, you foolish boy.
Oh, just one thing, Mrs. Burns. You know, of course, that the audience is going to be full of young girls.
Oh, naturally. What of it?
Oh, nothing, but if you want George Burns to win, I think you'd better mix some slow crows in with the slick chicks.
So that's what Sinatra said, slow crows,
And he said to meet him here at CBS and you two could let the audience decide between you.
Slow crows, huh?
Mm-hmm.
He certainly has a lot of cheek.
Oh, no, George, they're hollow.
I suppose I won't get over with the girls because I haven't got hollow cheeks.
Well, you can always open your shirt and show them your chest.
Thanks, kid.
Oh, and another thing about Frankie. He's got a lock of hair that falls across his forehead. It makes him look like a cute little boy.
Oh. Maybe that's why the girls go for him. He brings out the mother in them.
Oh, maybe. But when he sings, they put her away and bring out something younger.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'll sing rings around.
Here I am, Gracie. Where is he? Where is he?
What's she doing here?
Oh, I promised that I'd introduce her to Mr. Sinatra.
Gracie, there he is, coming in the door.
Oh, over here, Mr. Sinatra.
Hello. Are you ready for the contest?
Well, we certainly are. Oh, I want you to meet my husband, Mr. Burns.
How do you do, sir?
Don't shake hands with me. He's George Burns.
Oh, pardon me.
I'm Tootsie Stagwell, Frankie, and I'm one of your most devoted admirers. I buy 50 copies of every record you make.
50 copies of the same record?
Uh-huh.
Well, you see, she sleeps with them and they break.
Now I've heard everything.
Frankie, on one of your programs, would you sing a song just for me? A song that'll tell me how it feels to have a man sweep me into his arms and kiss me and kiss me?
Okay. How about You'll Never Know?
Oh, you're adorable.
Oh, now, Tootsie, stop hanging on Mr. Sinatra. Oh, you poor boy. You really should eat more. Now, look, just take a look at George. He's the breakfast of champions.
Looks like the champions didn't leave him much today.
Oh, just a minute,
son. Oh, now, look, you two boys go into the studio and rehearse. I'll join you in a minute. Come on, Tootsie.
Goodbye, Frankie.
So you're George Burns, eh?
Yeah.
Ain't misbehaving all by myself.
Do you think the kids will dig my voice?
You'd be able to. There's plenty of gravel in it.
Okay, Bowtie, where do we hold this contest?
Right in here, Studio A.
Okay, let's get started. Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Burns. You rehearse first.
No, take it, kid. I don't need a rehearsal.
Man, you frighten me. Okay, Felix, let's run through my number, please.
I'm not much to look at. Nothing to see.
Oh, yes, you are, Frankie.
Just glad I'm living and lucky to be. I got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way. I can't save a dollar, and I ain't worth a cent. She'd never holler, she'd live in a tent. I got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way. Though I know she'd work and slave for me every day, she'd be so much better off if I went away. But why should I leave her? Why should I go? She'd be unhappy without me, I know. I got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way.
George, I heard all that applause outside. You killed them. They loved you, huh?
Ah, that was for Sinatra. You know, when he hits certain notes, all the girls go, oh.
They go, what?
Oh. And not only that, but they answer him when he sings.
Oh, I see.
Hey, you ready to start the contest, George?
Sure, Bill. Go ahead.
Okay, Felix. Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness radio history. A singing contest between Frank Sinatra, who is adored by millions, and George Burns, who is loved by his wife. And now here is the first contestant, George Sugar Throat Burns.
Hey, Felix, wait a minute. I don't need all that orchestra.
Attaboy, George, show him up.
Yes. I'll sing the same number and just give me just a piano player.
Yeah, and have him play with only one hand.
Okay, Felix, let's go.
I'm not much to look at. Nothing to see.
You said it.
Now you keep quiet, miss. I'll do the reactions to my husband's song.
Just glad to be living and lucky to be.
You said it, George.
But I've got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way.
Oh.
What was that?
Come on, sing. Sing, I'm reacting.
I ain't got a dollar. I'm not worth a cent.
You said it, George.
But she doesn't holler. She'd live in a tent. I got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way.
Oh,
what is that?
George out. React to his song.
Okay, Gracie.
Jean, she likes to work and slave for me every day.
But she won't have to work and slave if she uses Swan soap.
Huh?
Swan, you know, is four soaps in one. The soap for dishes, for your light laundry, the soap for bathing the baby, and the soap for your complexion.
Let's take that again, Felix.
Jean, she likes to work and slave for me every day. She'd be so much better off
using Swan soap.
Bill, please.
Quiet, George. Bill is reacting to your thoughts.
Yeah, George, quiet.
If I went away, but why should I leave?
That's right, leave her. Leave her brother's company makes Swan. And remember, you can break Swan in two and put half in the kitchen for dishes and light laundry and half in the bath for your hands and face, tub or shower.
Oh, shut up. I don't want any more reaction. I've only got 8 bars left to top Sinatra. Come on, Felix, give me all you've got. Why should I leave her?
Why should I go? She'd be unhappy without me, I know. I got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way.
Ah. Sinatra, after hearing that, I suppose you'd like to call the contest off?
No, Mrs. Burns. Call me a fool if you like, but I think I have a fighting chance.
Well, all right, if you insist. Because I've never heard you sing. But can a sparrow compete with a nightingale?
Well, at least I'll try.
Won't you tell me when we will meet again? Sunday, Monday, or always. If you're satisfied, I'll be at your side. Sunday, Monday, or always. No need to tell me now what makes the world go round. When at the sight of you, my heart begins to pound and pound. And what am I to do? Can't I be with you? Sunday, Monday, or always? Won't you tell me when we will meet again? Sunday, Monday, always. And if you're satisfied, I'll be at your side. Sunday, Monday, or always. No need to tell me now what makes the world go round. When at the sight of you, my heart begins to pound and pound. And what am I to do? Can't I be with you? Sunday, Monday, or always. Well, Mrs. Burns, do you still think your husband is the better singer? Mrs. Burns.
Oh, what did you say, Frankie?
I said, do you still think your husband is the better singer?
Your husband? What husband, Frankie?
Gracie, he wants to know if I'm better than he is.
George Burns, take me home, and don't you ever open your mouth again.
George and Gracie will be back in a second. And say, while I'm standing here, I might mention that no woman has to go around with her hands looking all red and chapped and rough simply because she washes her own dishes and does her own light laundry. Try Swan. It's a great wartime buy, believe me. Well, here they are again.
George and Gracie.
George.
Don't speak to me.
Are you mad?
Darn right I am.
Oh, now that's silly. Frank Sinatra means nothing to me.
Really?
Really. The very idea of grown women acting like schoolgirls just because of him.
Well, I certainly... Gracie, what are you doing?
Putting on my bobby sock.
From August of 1943, it's been the Burns and Allen Show with special guest star Frank Sinatra. In a moment, Murder by Experts with Two Coffins to Fill as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Murder by Experts was a fine mutual mystery detective series sustained on Monday nights from September of 1949 through 1951. Offered were tales chosen by some of the world's leading writers of mystery fiction, including John Dixon Carr and Brett Halliday. The stories were highly charged plots of crime and passion, bearing out the adage that the best is produced by the best. Most of the murderers on Murder by Expert were simple crimes without gimmickry, gadgetry, or fancy embellishment, but rather heavily laden with human emotion. Emerson Buckley provided the music. Serving jointly as producer-directors were Robert A. Author and David Kogan, the writing team from Mutual's Mysterious Traveler. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Murder by Experts and the case of Two Coffins to Fill from July of 1949. Another classic radio program from the audio vaults of yesteryear.
Murder by Experts. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Murder by Experts with your host and narrator, Mr. John Dixon Carr, world-famous mystery novelist and author of the recently published bestseller, The Life of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
This is John Dixon Carr. Each week at this time, Murder by Experts brings you a story of crime and mystery which has been chosen for your approval by one of the world's leading detective writers. Those experts who are themselves masters of the art of murder and can hold tensity at its highest. This time, our guest expert is the noted mystery novelist, Kelly Roos. From the innumerable thrillers he has read and enjoyed, Mr. Roos has chosen a story by Robert Foster. To quote Mr. Roos, the story is a fascinating study of an ambitious and corrupt man venturing into the unknown and being caught in a whirlpool of violence and death. And now we present Carl Weber in Two Coffins to Fill. The scene, Nick's Place, a popular roadhouse on the West Coast. It's early evening, and the dimly lit cocktail lounge is empty, save for the bartender and a couple in a corner booth.
Roger, we can't go on like this.
Why not, darling?
I'm tired of meeting you at discreet places, of seeing you only when you can get away from your wife.
Just have to be patient, Eve.
Patient? It's already a year. How long do you think I'll go on waiting for you?
What would you have me do?
Leave her. Forget about the money. We can get along.
On what? Oh, no, Eve.
What do you think you'll get from her?
I have plans. It'll take time, but I'm very patient.
Well, I'm not. I can't go on waiting, Roger. I won't.
I'm sorry, Eve. Another drink?
Nothing affects you, does it, Roger? War, famine, or love? You're a man with only one weakness, money.
Why is it that women can never break off without creating a scene?
Why, you arrogant... What a fool I've been. All right, Roger, I'll break off without creating a scene. Goodbye, Roger.
I'll have another, Steve, and put a dash of bitters in it.
Hello, Thornton. Your friend left in a hurry.
You're quite observant, Al.
I'm a student of human nature. Nick's having a game in the back tonight. Interested?
A game?
Poker.
Yes, since my date's walked out on me, I'll play a few hands. Tell Nick I'll be there.
Hello,
It's amazing how one small weakness can disrupt an otherwise orderly and well-thought-out plan. My wife, Frieda's first husband, left her with a manufacturing plant, holdings amounting to something like $4 million. That's a comfortable sum of money, and I'm a man who likes comfort, or I wouldn't have married Frieda. She was 40 and tired, and no bargain special in the marriage market. But I had plans. Plans that didn't include murder. Not then. I was a patient man. Patient until a weakness occurred, and I spent the night playing cards in a back room at Nick's place. That night cost me $30,000, all on my signature. Perhaps that's why Nick's gun-happy friend Al was so insistent a couple of weeks later. I was sitting at the bar in Nick's.
Thornton.
Yes?
You busy?
That depends.
Nick wants to see you in his office.
Wants to see me about what?
I didn't ask him.
I'll tell him I'll drop back after I finish this drink.
Make it now.
What?
I said now, Thornton.
All right. All right, let's have it your way.
Hello, Roger.
Good evening, Nick.
Sit down.
Before I sit down, let's have an understanding. I don't like the idea of your man here pushing me around with a gun.
A gun?
I kept it covered, Nick.
And we don't want any trouble, Al.
Nobody's seen me.
Don't mind Al, Roger. He takes his work seriously.
Perhaps someone will take him seriously someday.
Al's a good boy, for a price. Right, Al?
That's right.
I'm not interested in the merits of your bodyguard.
Sit down, Roger. You're getting red in the face. Al, mix us a drink, will you?
Sure, Nick. Coming up.
Roger, what about that 30 grand you owe me?
I'll pay you when I get it.
That's a poor bet, Roger. I've been checking on you.
What do you mean, checking on me?
You're a punk. That wife of yours has got all the dough. You haven't got a dime.
My personal affairs don't concern you, Nick.
I'm a right guy. I've never given a right guy a bum break yet. About that, Al?
That's right.
I'm a gambler, Roger. When I lose, I pay off. When I win, I aim to collect.
Before you start laying down the law, Nick, that happens to be an uncollectible debt.
Yeah, I got a lawyer, too. When you say uncollectible, Roger, you want to figure all the angles.
What angles?
Al, what do you figure this guy's worth?
About 30 grand.
Which way?
Either way.
What are you talking about? What do you mean, either way?
Tell him, Al.
Sitting up or lying down?
Now, see here, Nick.
I can see, Roger. And I want you to see me tomorrow with 30 grand.
I said I'd pay you.
Tomorrow.
I don't know if I can get it that soon.
I don't like punks like you, Roger. You're crummy. With all that dough you're tied up to, you're still crummy.
I'll do the best I can.
When I said tomorrow, Roger, I wasn't kidding. Was I, Al?
You sure wasn't, Nick.
I didn't like Nick calling me crummy. Whatever I wasn't Nick's kind of tramp. I was furious with myself for becoming so stupidly involved with him in that card game. And Frieda had me tied down as if I were a child, making me account for every nickel. If I'd had her then, I could have killed her. I'd have to have a talk with Frieda. When I got home, she was in the library.
You're late, Roger.
I stopped for a drink.
Won't you have your cocktails here at home?
You said you were going to the doctor's.
I did go.
Well, I thought you'd be late.
Not this late.
Is this going to be another session, Frieda?
No, it's not going to be another session. Roger, we're growing apart, aren't we?
Oh, heaven's sakes.
Now, please, Roger.
You'd stop treating me like a child. Do you know what someone called me today? Do you, Frieda?
No.
Crummy. He called me crummy because I'm... Well, because I'm tied to your apron strings.
Oh, now,
how do you think I felt? Vice president. I signed my name to half a dozen letters, and that makes me a vice president. Oh, I'm sick of it.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry? Did you marry me so you could push a button and have me come running?
Now, don't be absurd, Roger.
Why am I? Put yourself in my place.
I have put myself in your place. Tonight, while I was waiting for you.
What do you mean, Frieda?
Well, I thought it'd be nice if we could spend the weekend at the lodge.
The mountain?
Yes, Roger.
Why?
Oh, we could talk things over.
Why can't we talk it over now?
A weekend vacation together would be nice.
Oh, then you didn't have anything to talk over. It's only a ruse to get me up to the lodge.
No, it wasn't a ruse. You've been wanting to handle the advertising for the plant. I wanted to surprise you.
You mean you're turning the advertising over to me?
Yes.
I'll control the whole department, everything?
Everything.
Why, that's wonderful, darling. Of course it's a surprise, a charming surprise.
Does it make you happy, Roger?
Of course it does. I have something to to do, or something I can sink my teeth into.
Then will you go up to the lodge for the weekend?
Well, why don't you run up by yourself this time, Frida? You need the rest, you know, and I have something important to tend to.
I wanted you to go.
Of course you did, dear. But next time, Frida. Next time. I promise you. Frida's act was more considerate than she realized. Having access to some funds, I could pay Nick, write it off to advertising. For a moment, I felt almost kindly toward Frida. But then, as I stared at her, long and hard, wondering if I could care for her even remotely, my thoughts were revolted. I hated her for condescending to place me in charge of the advertising department. I knew I could no longer tolerate her, standing in the way of everything I was waiting for. Not until the next day did I conceive the plan. I was ready when Nick's bodyguard, Al, came into my office.
Nick sent me over.
I didn't think it was a social call.
I don't like jokes.
You're very businesslike, aren't you, Al?
I work for a living.
When you work hard. And when you play, you play hard. Is that right, Al?
That's right.
Could you use, say, 5,000 to play with?
I don't like chiselers.
Chiselers?
You heard me.
Oh, you think I'm trying to buy you off because of the money I owe Nick?
What am I supposed to think?
I see. Well, here's a check for Nick. What do you think now?
30 grand. How do I know this is good?
You're smarter than that, Al.
Okay. Okay, what's on?
What's 5,000 worth to you, Al?
Could be worth anything. Maybe.
Maybe.
Nick doesn't come in on this?
No. This is just between us.
How hard is it?
Maybe a bit difficult.
With 10 grand, I might see you.
10,000?
Is it yes or is it no?
Well, I don't know yet, Al. I'll give you a ring tomorrow at Nick's. I have to make some arrangements. Frida?
Yes, Roger?
Are you still planning to go to the mountains for the weekend?
No, not without you.
Well, I've been thinking, you do need a rest, you know.
Oh, I can rest just as well right here.
Yes, I realize that, but I thought I might come up to the lodge with you.
Oh, Roger, do you really mean it?
Of course, dear.
Oh, I'm so glad you decided to go with me.
Oh, there's just one thing, Frida.
Yes?
I won't be able to come up until later Saturday evening.
Oh, I don't mind driving up late.
But you don't understand, Frida. I expect you to drive up early.
Why, Roger?
Well, you can check over the repair work that needs to be done on the lodge.
Repair work?
Yes, I ran into an old friend of mine today, Frida, a carpenter, Al Graves. He's a bit down on his luck, and, you know, the lodge could stand some work.
Well, that's perfectly all right with me, Roger, but must I go up early?
Well, we don't want him hanging around, do we?
No, of course not.
Good. Then I'll ride up with Al. Now, when we get there, we can discuss the repairs. He'll look things over, and then he'll drive on back in his own car.
And you want me to go up early so I can make a list of the things to be done?
Yes, Frida, that's it. Do you mind about the carpenter, I mean?
Of course I don't mind, Roger. I'm just so happy that you want to go.
Thanks for the drink, Thornton.
You haven't answered my question, Al.
I'm thinking.
Thinking what?
Murder's quite a rap.
Had your proposition. If you want to forget it.
I didn't say that.
Then you'll do it.
When's the payoff?
1,000 now. 9,000 Saturday night.
You want it done about 9 o'clock?
Just so it happens before I get there.
I get a ride back with you.
Yes.
Maybe you try to pull something like the cops.
I couldn't risk bringing the police in. You're smart enough to know that.
Smarter than you think, Thornton.
All right, now it has to look like a struggle and robbery.
Leave that to me. Is everything okay with the wife for me to ride her up there?
It will be. Saturday morning.
Thornton residence.
Oh, Charles, this is Mr. Thornton.
Oh, good morning, sir.
May I speak to Mrs. Thornton?
Very well, sir. She's right here, sir.
Roger?
Oh, I was afraid you might have left for the lodge already.
No, not for an hour yet.
Frida, I wonder if you'd mind doing something.
What is it?
Well, Al Graves, the carpenter who is going to drive me up.
Yes?
His car is broken down. It's in the garage. Would you mind terribly taking Al up with you?
Oh, and Roger, really,
He could look over the repairs himself that way.
Well, when will you come up?
As soon as I'm finished working at the office, I'm working on the new advertising program.
Well, I suppose I could have Richard take Al and myself up in the sedan.
Oh, you don't have to bother Richard. Why not take your convertible?
Oh, couldn't we have that carpenter come up some other time, Roger?
All right. Let's just forget the whole thing, Peter, if you wish. You can go on up alone.
Now, Roger, you know that...
Things must always go your way.
Well, will you drive up in your car?
Yes. Al can use it to return to town.
Well, all right. Where'll I pick him up?
On the corner of Hawthorne and Orange.
Hawthorne and Orange?
Yes, I'll tell him to watch for the convertible.
All right, Roger. I'll see you at the lodge tonight, darling.
Things for the past few days have moved so amazingly fast and remarkably well that I had little time to reflect upon my emotions. Frida's surprising agreement to my wishes, I knew, was merely a new tack in her attempt to draw me closer to her. And yet, as I drove through the lane to the lodge in the evening, I had an unaccountable fear. The wind whined through the trees, and the eerie sound disturbed me. I parked the car and sat for a few moments watching the lights in the lodge. It was 10 o'clock. Al should have been finished long ago. I got out of the car, walked to the veranda, and opened the door.
You finally got here.
Yes.
Well, how does it look? You satisfied?
I said to make it look like a struggle.
Don't it?
I guess it's all right.
You got the dough.
Where is she?
In the bedroom. Go ahead, take a look. Turn on the light.
No. I can see.
Satisfied, Thornton?
She's partly under the bed.
Yeah, she got scared. She tried to hide. I had to follow her.
Shut the door. I said shut the door.
You're a funny guy.
Why?
You figure all this out and can't stomach your own stuff.
Let's sit down and have a drink. Huh?
Sure. You got the dough?
Yes, sure. There should be some glasses here.
On that shelf.
Yes, I see. I'll fix the drinks.
Forget that drink. We're gonna blow.
Where's her car?
Garage. Want to see it?
No. Here you are.
You need it worse than I do, Thornton.
Where'll you go from here, Al?
A trip, maybe.
Well, you have nothing to worry about for me.
That I know, Thornton.
How was it? How was it done?
Done.
Did you leave it?
I'll get rid of it.
Well, here's to you, Al.
Yeah. All right, Thornton. Now let's have the dough.
Certainly. I've got it right here.
I've been thinking about you, Thornton. I think Nick's right. You're crummy.
Oh, no, you shouldn't feel that way, Al.
I had to do it over.
You won't.
Say, I'm sick. What'd you put in that drink?
Why, nothing, Al.
You double-crossing. I'll kill you, Al.
Will you, Al? I poured some of the liquor on Al and tipped the bottle over. Then I carried him out of the lodge, across the carpet of pine needles, to the bluff 100 yards away. I placed one of Frida's expensive bracelets in his pocket, along with some money and articles of lesser value. I dropped him over the bluff and heard his body strike the rocky stream bed 300 feet below. I went quickly to my car and drove away. I drove rapidly for an hour till I passed an all-night diner. I wheeled the car around in the highway, pointing it back in the direction I'd come. Then I ran the car into a ditch hard. The front fender crumpled against the wheel and the tire blew out. I couldn't have wished anything better. This was it, my alibi. I walked a mile up the road to the diner. As I opened the door, a car pulled up. When I entered the cafe, a girl got out of the car and followed me in.
Where'll it be, folks?
Coffee, please.
You, mister?
Coffee. Say, is there a tow truck around?
Tow truck?
I blew out a tire and went into the ditch about a mile down the road.
Jim Parson has a tow truck. Him and the missus went into L.A. Won't be back till Monday.
Here you are, miss.
Monday. Thanks.
Wrecked your car bad?
Smashed the wheel. I don't have a spare.
Oh, that's too bad. Going far?
my lodge about 50 miles up, the Thornton place, Roger Thornton. Maybe you know it.
Thornton? No, can't say I do.
My wife's there, but I'm sure she's all right.
You don't stand much of a chance of getting a ride going that way this time of night.
I suppose not.
You can use a phone there, reverse charges.
No, the phone's disconnected up at the lodge.
You might be able to hitch to L.A. Once in a while, there's a car going that way.
That's an idea.
Anything else for you, miss?
No, thanks. How much?
10 cents. Thank you. Night.
Good night.
I reckon the young lady didn't want a passenger.
So it seems. Hey, I think I will use your phone.
Help yourself.
Have you got that straight, Charles?
Yes, sir. I'm to call the auto club and have them pick up your car.
It's quite a way to the lodge, so I'm going to try to get a ride back to town.
Were you hurt, sir?
Oh, I'm perfectly all right. It may be rather late before I get in, so leave a light in the library.
Very well, sir.
Good night, Charles.
Is that all, sir?
Why, yes. Yes, that's all.
Very well, sir.
Thank you for the use of the phone.
Oh, that's okay, mister.
Could you use a drink?
I ain't never been known to turn one down.
I got a bottle in my car.
Well, that's quite a walk.
It's nice out, and I could use a drink myself.
Suit yourself.
You don't mind if I sit around after I get back? Maybe I can pick up a ride.
Glad to have you. I'm open the whole night.
Good, good. I'll be right back.
Mister?
Yes?
Did you say you wanted a ride to L.A.?
Why, yes, yes, if you're going that way.
Hop in.
Well, thank you very much.
I would have asked you in there, but I didn't want to give the counterman the wrong idea, Mr. Thornton.
How did you know my name?
You told the counterman.
Oh, of course. I was just going to get a bottle out of my car.
I already got it.
You got it?
Sure. Nice car, thirsty girl, I had a hunch.
How long were you with the car?
Long enough to find a bottle and see your name on the steering post.
I thought you heard me tell the counterman.
I did. So then I knew you was a gentleman.
Have you... You drunk much of that bottle?
Enough.
Hey, you shouldn't be driving if you've been drinking too much.
Scared?
Oh, no, it's for your own good.
I'm celebrating.
You might have waited till you got in Los Angeles.
Mr. Thornton.
Yes?
Why'd you turn your car around and run it into that ditch?
What?
I know all about you, Mr. Thornton.
Who are you? What's your name?
Della.
Della what?
Just Della.
Look out! You nearly turned us over. Either stop this car and let me drive, or...
Or what, Mr. Thornton?
Stop this car.
When we get to Nick's.
Did you say Nick's?
I'm Al's girlfriend.
No.
Didn't you think Al could have a girlfriend?
Why did you pick me up?
Because I'm not half as tight as you think I am.
Then, what do you want?
Al was a punk, a nice punk, but punks come cheap, Mr. Thornton. I want that $9,000.
Do you think I'd carry that kind of money around?
And did you think Al was stupid enough not to have somebody cover him at the lodge?
You were there? You saw?
Yes, I was there. And I saw.
You're a very brave girl, Della. Threatening me.
I don't scare easy. I know you're kind.
Do you?
This is a gun, Mr. Thornton. I'm not afraid to use it.
You're a very stupid child.
If you try anything, I'll wreck this car.
Watch that curve. I'll take that gun. Now, stop the car or I'll kill you.
No, you won't.
I'll hold that wheel.
Let go of me. Let go.
You're stopping right here. All right. All right. Now, get out of the car. Get out.
I'm unwilling to talk to you.
Get out.
My arm.
Now, down this ravine.
I was only kidding you. I wanted to scare you. I didn't mean it.
Must I force you?
I won't tell nobody.
You're my only witness. My only witness.
Please, let me tell you. Let me talk to you.
This will do.
Wait. You've got to let me explain it.
When the girl told me she'd seen me kill Al, I went out of my head. I didn't know what I was doing. I shouldn't have killed her. I'm stupid. But I couldn't help it. I couldn't stop. I drove the girl's car into town and left it on the side street. I dropped the gun down a sewer and caught a bus home. It was almost daylight. I was tired and sick. But it was all over. It was all over. I unlocked the front door and quietly entered the house. My house. I was too keyed up for sleep. All I needed was a bracer. I went into the library.
Good morning, Roger.
Rita!
Who did you expect?
Rita, what are you doing here?
I've been waiting since you telephoned Charles.
I killed them. What? I killed them both.
You killed them?
Al and the girl, and you're here. You're right here.
Stop it. Stop it, Roger. Roger, stop it. I'm so sorry for you.
I had it all figured out. I did. I had...
That man, Al, the carpenter, he told me everything, Rochester. I had to pay him.
You paid him? You? And it was the girl I saw. She was in the bedroom, pretending to be you, pretending to be dead. Al framed the whole thing as a shakedown. He never intended to kill you.
Oh, I'm so sorry for you.
You said that. You said that. Who are you to feel sorry for me?
I love you. I'm going to miss you, Roger.
Love? Then why didn't you do something? Why didn't you tell me?
I didn't know. I stayed home hoping you'd come here and we could talk things over before you did anything rash.
Rash? You call it rash. Do you know what I've done?
That's why I'm so sorry for you.
You say that once more. Once more, Frieda.
It was greed, wasn't it, Roger? Greed for my money.
I hate you, Frieda.
I know. And I love you. Is this strange, Roger?
It's pathetic.
What I wanted to tell you at the lodge, Roger. Or if I only told you sooner.
What do you mean? Frieda, what do you mean?
I'll tell you. But it's too late now, Roger. You've killed two people. And you'll hang. I let you.
What are you doing with that gun?
I haven't any money, Roger. I've been wiped out. That's what I wanted to tell you. You needn't have killed them.
No, Frieda. No.
But I still love you.
No. No.
And I won't let you hang. Goodbye, Roger.
And so the curtain falls on two coffins to fill. This is your host, John Dixon Carr, hoping you'll be with us next week at this time.
In the cast of Two Coffins to Fill, which was written by Robert Foster, were Carl Weber, Eleanor Phelps, Jimmy Stevens, Miriam Wolfe, and Maurice Tarplin. Music was under the direction of Emerson Buckley and was composed by Richard DuPage. Murder by Experts is produced and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. All characters in our story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. This is Phil Tonkin speaking.
From July of 1949, it's been Murder by Experts in the case of Two Coffins to Fill. That's all the time we have for today, but be with us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen to enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. The comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
Preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions. All rights reserved. You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio, KSSR-DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing. The night away, listening to your favorite big bands. Places like Glen Island Casino, the Coconut Grove. Relive the music and the memories. All your favorite bands from all the most exciting night spots. Coming up on Make Believe Ballroom, a part of Swing Street Radio with Craig Roberts.
Each week at this time, we present live recorded music from famous ballrooms and night spots from across the nation. In radio's early days, most of the music enjoyed by listeners came from live performances via remote. Places like the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago, the Palomar in Los Angeles, and the Palladium in New York were just a few of the locations where radio brought its microphones in order to bring fine listening and dancing music to the nation. On this edition of Swing Street Ballroom, we present a sample of just such a live broadcast. As the network announcers used to say, the nation's leading dance bands from the nation's leading dance spots. So, time now to move the furniture out of the way, roll back the carpet, and get ready to dance. It's the Swing Street Ballroom.
It's make-believe ballroom time.